other things I have promised I would do. Talking about higher power. I was just thinking like going from laughter yoga from the sublime to the ridiculous, or maybe from the ridiculous to the sublime. I can't really. Higher power. You know, the other day I was thinking, you can't do this with like English names. It's like, you know, London, Manchester, Liverpool, Hawaii just is a laughter yoga place. I don't know. Sorry.
Burnley.
What?
You go to Burnley.
Burnley. Okay. Yeah, maybe you can squeeze a few out. All right. So, one of the things about higher power, when I talk about higher power, for me, it's really in the context of the steps, and particularly in the context of step three. And I guess that's because it gives me something real, a real framework, rather than talking theoretically about God. You know, I'm not a theologian, and I'm not that interested in cosmology. You know, I'm interested in recovery, and I'm interested in Dharma, and I'm interested in how, I guess I would say, spiritual transformation happens. And so there's this sort of view in the Buddhist world that's sometimes expressed, which is you are responsible for your own enlightenment. And so there is no God to help you. And when people talk about God in that way, I think what they're talking about is a certain definition of God, which is this being that exists somewhere that intervenes personally in the existence of individual people or countries or football teams, you know. And that's a really trivial definition of God, and it's one that's somewhat ahistorical, according to Karen Armstrong, that historical views of God were not of this kind of. It's kind of it goes back to Michelangelo, right, painting the Sistine Chapel with this guy with a beard, you know, but that's not really even how traditional Christian or other religions viewed God. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that. But if we can, so I think we start out with this problem of language. Language is very powerful in the way it conditions our beliefs. And when you're raised with a belief that God is has a certain meaning, it's difficult to change that. So that's why a lot of people kind of just throw the word out. But when we throw the word out, then it becomes difficult to discuss certain things. So if we can think of God as just being, well, Joseph Campbell said God is a metaphor. John Lennon said God is a concept with which we measure ourselves, I think. But I think just leaving it as God as a concept is good enough. So what is that a metaphor for? Or what is the concept that's being expressed? Well, to some extent, what's being expressed is, I don't know how everything came to be the way it is, or how everything works. And so I'm going to come up with this idea of something I'm going to call God. And in some systems, God created things. In some systems, God runs things. creation is something that the Buddha doesn't get into. The Buddha says, it's not helpful. It's not a question I'm going to explore about where everything came from. He said, I'm interested in freedom. How do I get freedom? It doesn't help me to explain where everything came from. But coming back to this idea of I have to get myself enlightened, I find that to be a very narrow idea. And for me, it's not an idea that actually makes sense. Because, first of all, there was a Buddha, as far as I know. And if it weren't for his teachings, I wouldn't have much chance. So there was something, and what the Buddha taught was not Buddhism, right? The Buddha taught Dharma. It's what through practicing Dharma that awakening happens. I don't create Dharma. I don't control Dharma. I can either live in harmony with the Dharma, or I can live out of harmony with the Dharma. We can say that's my choice. Choice is a questionable concept, or whether it exists or not, but it's not one I'm that interested in debating. Because it's kind of one of those traps you can just cycle through. But insofar as we have choice, we make a choice to live in a certain way. And this, in the steps, is expressed as we made a decision. So that's the choice that we make in the steps. We make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of this word God. But let's say, for our Buddhist purposes, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of the Dharma. What would that mean? The way I understand that is that it would mean that I would try to align my will or my intention with the Dharma, as opposed to what? As opposed to following my impulse, craving, greed, hatred, and delusion. The things that drive me as an addict, self-centeredness, ego gratification, all that stuff, which is happens to be what the Buddha says causes suffering. That's how we're programmed in that way as humans, and especially as addicts. We're programmed to follow those impulses. In order to change, we have to make a decision to try to align ourselves with something that doesn't actually feel right. I'd much rather get what I want, I'd much rather go get a drink, but if I stay sober in the long run, I understand that it's going to be better. And so that's the long part, that I don't get the quick fix, right? I turn my will and my life over to the Dharma because I know that in the long run, that's going to lead to what I want. So my will is my intention. My life is my actions. So what does that mean in practical terms, the Dharma? Okay, well, what the Buddha laid out was the Eightfold Path. So now we have actually eight steps, if you will. And this is kind of how Noah Levine is creating his refuge recovery. I'm going to try to have right view, right intention, and very specifically, I'm going to have right speech, right livelihood, right action. That's the five precepts. I'm going to try to not harm other people, not harm myself. And then I'm going to try to practice right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So that's the path those are the actions that I'm going to try to follow. And there's much more detail, what it means, right mindfulness, right effort, all this. This is what we study when we study the Dharma, and this is what we train ourselves and try to do to live in harmony with the Dharma, which is a power greater than us. And the way I know that is that if I don't live in harmony with it, I get what I get, I get the suffering. So, to me, it's clear that the Eightfold Path is not me, when it says I have to get myself enlightened, that doesn't mean I have to make up the Dharma. If I had to make up the Dharma, I'd be screwed, you know, because I am not that, you know, enlightened to do that. So obviously, to me, there are powers greater than me. The power of karma itself is the most obvious power that the Buddha talks about. And that's the way that power works is that certain classes of action, this, I'm not sure what kind of language this is, but it's the best I can do for you. Certain classes of action bring certain classes of results. So what we say in Buddhism, skillful actions bring skillful results. So what that means is that if I do the right thing, I might not get what I want exactly. It's not that there's a deal I make. The law of karma isn't a thing where, okay, if I am generous and I give, you know, 100 pounds to Kevin today, I'm going to win the lottery tomorrow, you know, because I had good karma. You know, that's like magic. That's magical thinking. Right, that I'm, so somehow, you know, it's this a system that just you. But what I know is that if I practice generosity, that brings a good feeling, and surprisingly enough, it tends to actually bring, when I'm generous to people around me, and I don't just mean money. When I'm generous with my heart, it comes back. Right. I'm thinking of another Beatle line, you know, the love you make is equal to the love you, how's it go? Take, but in any case, it's about karma, it's about a cycle. Okay? So, that law of karma, it's not something I created or that I have control over. If the law of karma worked the way I want it to, well, I don't want to say everything that I'd be doing, but it does involve a lot of things that are breaking precepts. You know, I'll say that. Most of them. And there would be no negative consequences, right? If the law of karma weren't a power greater than me, there would be no negative consequences to my breaking. But that's not the way it is. The law of karma is a power greater than me. It doesn't mean I have to do what the law of karma says to do. If, you know, if we say that the Buddha is kind of defining the law of karma, you know, with the five precepts, it doesn't mean I can't break the five precepts. It just means that I will get the results of doing that, which will not necessarily, I won't necessarily go to prison every time I break the law. For instance, I broke the law lots of times driving drunk and didn't get arrested. But there were karmic consequences, right? And some of them come immediately, some of them come later, and then some of them, we don't know when they'll come. But this is like a, you know, a field of powers that goes under the larger umbrella of Dharma. And as we take the Dharma apart and look at the different elements, we can see that there are all these elements of the Dharma that are very powerful. The power of mindfulness is one of the keys, right? Mindfulness is tremendously powerful. When you are awake and aware, you make wise choices. You make right effort. You know, your heart is open. There is kindness flows through you. When you are not mindful, you do foolish things. You do harmful things. This is a tremendous power. So this is what it means to me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I use the word God just because it's actually, it's a useful term, but I understand a lot of people can't make that adjustment. So I think you can easily say, turn your will and your life over to the care of the Dharma. And you can see that, yeah, there's something going on here. It's not this relationship of God is up here controlling me like a puppet. It's a relationship. It's more of a relationship in which, you know, I am making choices. I have a role. And that's, you know, the Bible says the same thing. I mean, in the Bible, it's not like God control. You know, it's like when people say, you know, how can children get killed and get cancer? You know, what kind of a loving God will do that? Well, karma doesn't love you. Karma doesn't have feelings. The law of karma is an impersonal... It's not like you blame the law of gravity. Why did the law of gravity make me fall over? It's so mean. It made me fall down and hit my head. Don't you love me? Doesn't the law of gravity love me? Gravity's just... It's an impersonal law. If we think of karma as more like a law of physics than a law of metaphysics, then maybe it's easier for us to understand how it works. It's a power greater than us, but it's nothing personal. No, don't take it personally. So, questions?